this is your Polycast for Wednesday, March 29th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a health insurance deal is close at the Capitol, and a fight looms over pre-kindergarten spending. A bill that aims to rein in soaring health insurance costs is nearing final action in the Minnesota legislature. House and Senate negotiators announced a deal they expect to finalize later today. The proposal creates what's called a reinsurance program to help insurers cover expensive medical claims. As Brian Baxter reports, the measure won't come cheap.
The bill has a price tag of $271 million in each of the next 2 years. Some of the funding would come from the state's general treasury, and some from a special health account fed by medical-related taxes. More could come from a pending legal case with insurers, if that is resolved in the state's favor. Plus, there's a chance that federal grants might take some of the load off state taxpayers. But Governor Mark Dayton, who's fighting a cold, expects the state to shoulder most of the tab.
It'd be great if the federal government would face up to this need for reinsurance and would use their much deeper pockets to provide it for all the states, but I don't see that happening at this point.
Dayton says the state has no choice but to do what it can to prevent further erosion of the individual insurance market. The reinsurance bill applies only to a small slice of the overall insurance market, specifically policies sold to people who don't get coverage from an employer or a government program. The individual insurance market serves about 5% of Minnesota's insured population, and they're the ones who've experienced especially sharp increases in costs the past couple of years. Insurers have experienced hundreds of millions of dollars in losses in the individual market, prompting the largest, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, to drop out this year. Republican Senator Gary Dames of Redwood Falls warned more insurers might do the same if the state doesn't provide the reinsurance safety net.
So now we have a marketplace that's collapsed, and we need to do something to bring that marketplace back. And this is one of the ways we can do that.
Already this year, state lawmakers approved more than $300 million in one-year discounts for individual policyholders. The money went to people who didn't qualify for other subsidies available through the Federal Affordable Care Act. Here's how the reinsurance idea would work starting next year. The backup insurance wouldn't be available until an individual's claims exceed $50,000. Beyond that threshold, the state program would pay 50% or more of the costs. Once claims exceed $250,000, the primary insurer would be back on its own. The thinking is that if the state provides a financial buffer for insurers, they won't have to jack up premiums as high. Customers themselves won't have to do anything. It's a largely back-office program. Commerce Commissioner Mike Rothman says he expects the program will help ease premiums for the consumers.
In terms of the annual premium relief target, it would result in again, it's approximation based on the estimates of about 20%.
There's actually a requirement in the bill to make insurance companies report how much they would have charged in premiums absent the reinsurance plan. The information will be included in annual rate filings with state regulators. Republican Senator Jim Abler of Anoka questions whether that exercise is worth it, and he's not sure what relief consumers can bank on.
There's no guarantee of anybody doing anything in this bill. They're just guaranteed to get the money and do the best they can.
DFL Senator Tony Lurie of Carrick agreed.
I don't know that the way this is constructed, it gives the Department of Commerce any authority to actually push back on the plans no matter what number they put out.
The reinsurance system will be managed by a 13-member board of directors. That will be made up of mostly health industry representatives, but there must be two plan enrollees on the board. The bill could come to a vote as soon as today in the House. Passage there would send it to the Senate and eventually on to Dayton. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxter at the Capitol.
DFL Governor Mark Dayton says a $175 million expansion of voluntary pre-kindergarten remains one of his budget priorities this session. Dayton renewed his push for the spending after House and Senate Republicans snubbed the request in their recent budget proposals. Tim Pugmire has the story.
After winning approval last session for $25 million in pre-K funding, Dayton says he wants to build on that success. There are currently 3,300 four-year-olds participating in 74 school districts. Dayton's proposal would increase participation to more than 17,000 students in 260 school districts. Dayton said during a news conference that he wants a balanced approach that also includes early learning scholarships, quality child care, and school readiness programs. but he said pre-K is needed in areas that have few options.
To have that available through the schools is really essential, or otherwise those children don't get an opportunity to advance along with others.
Dayton's plan would fund voluntary pre-K in every district that has already applied for the limited funds. Educators from some of those districts helped him make the case. Cindy Stolp, the early childhood education director in Pine City, said her district tried unsuccessfully to get some of the money. Stolp said Pine City is ready to begin when and if the funding arrives. She said there's also a waiting list.
It breaks my heart when a four-year-old arrives at our school with their backpack loaded, ready to learn, and we have to turn them away. I wish we could serve every child right now, but we just can't.
House Republicans have long resisted Dayton's pre-kindergarten push. Their recently released education finance bill eliminates the base pre-K funding that they approved last session. Republican Representative Jennifer Loon of Eden Prairie, the chair of the House Education Committee, said she prefers a more targeted approach that directs funding to the children who need it most. Loon favors early learning scholarships and school readiness programs, which, unlike pre-K, do not require licensed teachers.
The governor's now trying to take us in a slightly different direction by having really a new grade at school. And that serves children whether they come from economic disadvantaged backgrounds or not.
Loon adjusted her bill this week to help the 74 districts currently receiving voluntary pre-K funding. She says they will instead receive an equal amount of school readiness funding.
It's an olive branch to the governor to say that those school districts are not going to lose out on an opportunity to provide quality early learning to those children in their community. They're just going to have more flexibility with the dollars that I'm assigning to it.
But Dayton, who described the original House proposal as appalling and accused Republicans of using four-year-olds as bargaining chips, brushed off Loon's overture.
That's not an olive branch. That's a poke in the eye.
Senate Republicans took a different approach in their education bill. They didn't include the governor's proposed increase and kept pre-K funding at its current level. Republican Senator Carla Nelson of Rochester is the chair of the Senate Education Committee.
The bill that I have, a rather small target. We did a very good job with the bill we have, and so we put additional funding into the scholarship side of things.
The House and Senate are expected to take action on education funding bills next week. Negotiations will then heat up with the governor on a potential compromise. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Now that President Trump has signed an executive order rolling back a number of Obama-era policies aimed at addressing climate change, you may be asking what it means for Minnesota. Reporter Elizabeth Dunbar has the answer.
In 2015, then-President Obama put climate change front and center as he rolled out new rules to retire many of the nation's coal-fired power plants by 2030 and otherwise reduce emissions as part of a global effort to address a warming planet. President Trump took the first major step in a 180-degree turn on climate policy. Climate change wasn't mentioned once during his announcement. Jobs, and specifically jobs for coal miners, took center stage, as Trump recalled visiting a group of them in West Virginia during the presidential campaign.
And I said, how about this? Why don't we get together, we'll go to another place, and you'll get another job. You won't mine anymore. Do you like that idea? They said, no, we don't like that idea. We love to mine. That's what we want to do. I said, if that's what you want to do, that's what you're going to do.
Trump shook the hands of the coal miners, then sat down to sign the order.
You know what it says, right? You're going back to work.
That's good.
We don't have coal in Minnesota, but there's still plenty of it coming into the state on rail cars from Wyoming and Montana. Minnesota generated roughly 44% of its electricity from coal in 2015, according to the Energy Information Administration. But that percentage is expected to drop further, despite President Trump's promise to put coal miners back to work.
It's a good talking point for this administration, but from a practical standpoint, no one is going to change their behavior.
State Representative Pat Garofalo, a Republican, oversees the House Energy Committee.
The combination of wind and natural gas on price, pollution, and productivity are just trouncing every other energy source. and this executive order won't change that.
Obama's Clean Power Plan aimed to make states reduce carbon emissions from power plants in a way that federal officials argued was manageable for each state. Because Minnesota was already on an accelerated path toward cleaner energy sources, the rules called for a 40% reduction by 2030. The federal energy policy debate is expected to play out in court for a while, but Minnesota officials say the state will meet its Clean Power Plan target without the federal regulation. David Thornton is an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Goals and targets that 2 or 3 years ago seemed unreachable are all of a sudden business as usual. I would not be surprised if that trend continues and we find that in 5 years from now, all kinds of things that we thought today were not possible are possible.
Wind and solar energy are getting cheaper, and a lot of people are getting excited about the possibility of big batteries to store renewable energy. Corporations, local governments, and some state governments are embracing clean energy both for economic reasons and because it's better for the environment. However, that message hasn't taken hold everywhere, and it's at that level where the president's policy shift may have the most immediate impact.
A lot of it is about norms and being symbolic, taking that symbolic action, you know, and having something credible behind it.
Gabe Chan is a professor at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School of Public Affairs. He's been observing the international negotiations around climate change.
And certainly in the countries of the world where global emissions are rising fastest, it really matters how those countries perceive the kinds of action the U.S. is taking. And I think when the administration comes forward and talks about climate change like the science isn't certain, I think it makes it a lot harder for those countries to build the domestic case to do anything there.
Meanwhile, evidence of a changing climate keeps piling up. For Minnesota, it means fewer pond hockey days, longer ragweed seasons, and heavier rainstorms that wreak havoc on farm fields, highways, and homes. Reporting on the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.